Last Sunday, after worship, I was chatting with some people in the gathering area, and our conversation took us to a discussion about the rooster, the weather vane, on the top of our steeple. And they were wondering if they were right in making a connection between the symbol of the rooster and the story about Peter on the night of Jesus' arrest. And they were right. That rooster up there is meant to remind us of that moment when Jesus said to Peter that when the cock crowed, he would deny him three times. And I said to them last week, I said, isn't that kind of strange that we have this symbol of personal failure standing atop our church steeple? And then we laughed and said, well, maybe it makes sense for a bunch of Calvinists, right, who like to talk about sin all the time. Last Sunday, during the adult education hour, Dr. Jim Brownson, who was teaching on the Gospel of John, made a comment about Peter that I've been thinking about all week, especially in light of Pastor Gordon's sermon last week. When I made the comment that the rooster was a symbol of personal failure, I think that's often how we read that moment for Peter, that it was a moment of kind of a failure of moral courage on his part when he denies Jesus. But what Jim invited us to think about was the way that Peter, like Jesus, was really caught up that night in some of systems and structures of power that were operating, much bigger than his own kind of personal decisions. And to name this as being just about Peter's personal failure fails to take into account the spirit, the ethos that was in those systems and structures, as Gordon talked about it last week, the powers that were at work that night. Walter Wink, whom Gordon referenced last week, talks about the way in which systems and structure and authority, that these are things that are good gifts from God because they are created by God for our good. But of course, many of them often in the world become corrupted, are broken, and in need of redemption. But there's another piece of what Walter Wink does in his theology that I wanted to highlight today. It's when he talks about the outer and inner forms of power. The outer forms are the things that are visible. It's what we can see. It's the people who are in the structure, the ways they relate to each other, the rules of the system, the things you can see. But there's also an inner form of power that operates. He likes to talk about this, and it's not visible at all, but he likes to talk about this in terms of the driving spirit that animates an institution. And when you look at the driving spirit that was animating the temple police and the high council and the guards that night, it was a spirit of intimidation and fear. Right? They were using tactics of terror. And so what happens for Peter, he doesn't have a change of heart. He doesn't suddenly decide that Jesus' teachings aren't worth following and is abandoning him when he denies his name. No, he, in the face of those powers, just simply finds himself terrified and traumatized. Now, in many ways, Jesus' whole ministry was about confronting the powers. He was in very different ways trying to dismantle these systems that we've all put together about how we live our life. All of these structures and ways of authority, and trying to help us envision how we could rebuild our communal life together in a different way. And it's not just about how the structures are put together, it's also about that spirit, that inner power that animates those systems. And Jesus was interested in creating communities where authority and loyalty to that authority come not because of intimidation and fear, but out of a shared sense of purpose and passion. What Peter gets caught up in that night was not his own personal failure. He gets swept up into something that is much bigger and much more insidious that was animating those structures that night. And what Jesus does with his resurrected life is to challenge the powers. We see that in Acts today. Saul has been running around posturing, kind of flexing his muscles, trying to intimidate the followers of Jesus in that same sort of insidious spirit of fear. And Jesus confronts him, right, through this vision on the road to Damascus. Now notice that this is not a public forum. There isn't very many people around to hear the confrontation, just the ones who were traveling with Saul. Saul, I suspect, had moments when he spoke to very large crowds. The confrontation could have come then, when many, many more voices could have heard what was said, where he could have been put in his place, humiliated and shamed. But that's not the spirit that animates Jesus' form of power. In fact, the question that Jesus poses to Saul is an incredibly vulnerable question. He simply asks him, "Why are you persecuting me?" It's a fierce question that cuts to the heart. And it's a question that completely changes Saul. From that moment, he realized that Jesus wasn't there to destroy the ways of God, which, by the way, was Saul's motivation, if we can give him this much of empathy. He was trying to protect the ways of God. But what he discovered is that Jesus was there not to destroy, but to embody the ways of God, to help, in fact, to redeem all of the parts that had been corrupted. And in this moment of loving but fierce confrontation, Saul begins to see the world in a totally new way. There are scales, it tells us. It's a beautiful metaphor, scales that just fall from his eyes. Now, the engagement with Peter has a very different feel to it, but it has the very same purpose. When Jesus comes to Peter on the beach, he asks a very vulnerable question of him as well. Do you love me? He asks it not because Peter's love for Jesus was ever in question. Peter doesn't need to be changed in the way that Saul needed to be changed. He needs to be built back up. Through the events that had transpired, Peter was so discouraged, so traumatized by all that had occurred. He needed to be built back up again. He needed someone to come and speak Psalm 30 into his life, to be reminded again that what God does for us is draw us up and heal us and restore us to life when we have gone down to the pit. To be reminded that anger lasts but a moment and God's favor for a lifetime. That weeping might linger for a night, but joy comes in the morning. The powers had done a number on Peter. And the way that Jesus confronted the powers in his life was through his fierce love. Now, for Saul and Peter, these encounters come in a direct way. For Saul, through a vision. For Peter, through an appearance of the risen Lord. But for us, in our day and in our time, the ways that we get confronted and encouraged, the ways that Psalm 30 gets spoken into our life and the fierce love of God comes to us, is most often through each other, through the people that we walk through life with. And I saw that happen this week in two places. One of them was really surprising because it was when I was watching TV, Empire, of all things. Now, word of caution, if you're going to run out and watch this show because I mentioned it, it's essentially a case study in total depravity. But with an awesome soundtrack, just to be clear. Because it's a story about this family behind an R&B, a hip-hop music label. And it's a family of brothers. There's three of them. And in this particular episode, one of the brothers, Andre, has just had a terrible loss. One of his wife had been pregnant, and she had a miscarriage. He's the one in the family whose Christian faith is lived out in the life of the church. The other one's not so much. But his brothers, the musicians, write and sing a song to him. And it was this incredibly shocking, beautiful moment watching them sing this song to him because they did what I just said. They spoke Psalm 30. I'm not kidding. Psalm 30 into his life. And I wanted to share just a few of the lyrics of this song, Good People. Sometimes it's hard to pray. Sometimes it's hard to stay grateful. It's painful. Hurts so bad. Sometimes it's hard to breathe, gets hard to keep going. We keep holding on to what could have been. But one day, it's gonna turn into another season. You're gonna see that all your tragedy you had was for another reason. It's just a temporary goodbye. So you gotta keep your head high, The rain is coming down and it's pouring, but joy is going to come inside the morning. And there's this hook that gets sung throughout the song. And the last time through, one of the brothers is singing it, and the other one's kind of rapping softly behind it. And he sings, "But we'll get by, and we'll see the light. Yeah, and in the morning, it's going to be all right. It's going to be okay. The circumstance, the Lord's gotcha, is in the plan, and I gotcha. And even if we don't fully understand why the bad things happen to the good people." It was when Hakeem was singing that piece in the background about the Lord's gotcha, and I've gotcha. I thought to myself, who in the world would have expected that empire would put out into the culture what it looks like for us to be and to do what we should in the body of Christ? Which leads me to the second moment, which happened in real life. There was someone in our community, Kate Mears, who's rather new, been around for just less than a year, and she gave me permission to tell this story, who had something happen in her life that needed to be celebrated. The kind of thing that you would turn to your family and people who've known you forever, maybe to go out and celebrate. But for a variety of circumstances that are complicated, like so many of our lives are, there really wasn't anyone to do it. And so some folks from Hope Church decided to throw a party for her. And when I arrived, the room was full, 25, 30 people, ages 4 to 78. There was cake, and there was sparkling cider, and there were toasts and gifts. And I looked around, and I said, yes, this is the body of Christ doing what it should do. Because when somebody has been walking a really long journey alone, we need to come alongside and speak some encouragement. And when there is something that needs to be celebrated and there's no one there to celebrate, we need to throw a party. And there was this moment when one of our elders made a toast that was a beautiful parallel to this moment between Jesus and Peter on the beach. When she lifted up her cup and she said, "Kate, we are so glad that you can now live your life of faith among us." This is what Jesus did for Peter that day. Remind him who he is as one who loves Jesus and is loved by Jesus, and then to issue to him a summons that comes to all of us. Tend my sheep and feed my lambs and live your faith among my people. Friends, there is a lot in the world that is good, and there is a lot, sometimes it feels like more, that is very, very broken. Powers, systems that are ruled by spirits of fear and intimidation. And part of our work is to confront and challenge those powers. And part of our work is to just embody that fierce love of Jesus, that love that is both strong and vulnerable, the kind of love that pushes us to be there for each other, to encourage and support and confront and to celebrate the very many ways that we all live out our faith together. Friends, Jesus is alive at work among us. Thanks be to God.